Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation, as well as the big MLB topics, along with the biggest names, greatest guests, and listener interaction, starring Score Baseball insider Bruce Levine, and half of Chicago's number one sports morning show, David Haw, on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, and always live on the free Odyssey app, presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
And good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Always a pleasure filling in for David Haw. Much needed break. This is Chuck Swirsky, and welcome to Inside the Clubhouse. We're talking Cubs, we're talking Sox, we're talking Major League Baseball, and of course, this show is all about great guests, but it's also about Chicago's very own Bruce Levine, the best host, the best reporter, and a great baseball historian right here in the great city of Chicago. And Bruce, thank you for allowing me to sit in for David Haw. And it was a good night for the Cubs and Sox. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, it was a great night for the Cubs and White Sox. A great comeback win for the Chicago White Sox. And the Cubs continue to mystify people out there with some outstanding starting pitching. So, Chuck, why don't we begin on the south side of Chicago with the stumbling and hard-to-explain Chicago White Sox and their come-from-behind victory against another team that has been one of the more disappointing teams in baseball this year, in the St. Louis Cardinals. It was an interesting evening on the south side. The White Sox had Dylan Cease out there, who has been as inconsistent as the team has been this year. And I think, Chuck, it was kind of a microcosm of the White Sox and Dylan Cease's year yesterday by the inconsistency of the start and at certain points the dominance of the start for Cease to be able to stay in there and pitch six innings in a game that he looked like he was being knocked out in the fourth and fifth inning.
Yeah, you know, when I look at the White Sox, obviously we talked about this the other day, Bruce, with you, about Robert, who's having a fantastic season, hit his 26th last night. But the inconsistency of the White Sox, whether it's hitting, whether it's pitching, I mean, you mentioned Cease. He gave up 5 earned runs, 11 hits in 6 innings, struck out 8, walked 1. And again, the bottom end of the bullpen got the job done last night for the White Sox. But I think you're right. I think a lot of fans are saying, okay, like, you've got the talent. When are you starting to go on to like a 7-game win streak? And we haven't seen it. And this club is 14 games under 500. And it really mystifies me because this club should be playing better baseball. And I don't know why.
Yeah, and again, there's a ton of talent. This has been the frustration all the way from the top, from actually last year all the way through this year when the White Sox finished 81-81 in 2022. Through this season with a change of manager and a change of coaching staff, a few minor changes with the team, Benintendi added to the mix as far as the outfield goes and the top of the order. Most everything else pretty much the same, but the frustration of the just the idea that it has really good players. Okay, so you have guys that can really play, that can hit, that can pitch, but putting the combination of all of that together for the Chicago White Sox in 2023 has been frustrating, and it was kind of like that yesterday in that game where they fall behind to St. Louis, and it looks like it's going to be a runaway game, and they chip away. And I think the grit of, you know, some of the younger guys on that team and the way they stood in there, you know, the Jake Burgers of the world have been really fun to watch this year. It was a nice comeback for the Chicago White Sox that certainly needed it.
Yeah, Burger, by the way, hit his 19th last night. Bruce, before we talk Cubs baseball, and again, our show featuring Bruce Levine and a ton of guests inside the clubhouse will go up until 11:30 for Cubs pregame. It's Smiley against Cole in New York as the Cubs won for the first time, actually, at Yankee Stadium, the old Yankee Stadium, the new Yankee Stadium, and the Cubs in the win column. But I want to ask you a question about Benintendi. What is your assessment of him in a White Sox uniform this year?
Well, I really like him. He's a versatile guy that can hit first or second. He plays a very solid left field, brings in a ton of experience, including playing on a championship team. This is something that really the White Sox were looking at when they brought in Benintendi, to be able to bat first, second. He's actually hit in all five of the top positions for Pedro Grifol in that lineup this year. So a very good player, and just a guy that I think will continue to help for them the rest of the year. They signed him to a four-year deal, so it's a good sign for the White Sox. And I think they're, as we'll talk about a little bit later, Chuck, Pedro Grifol and the White Sox are looking for more of the Benintendi type of player going forward, including this year and next. And we'll hear a little bit about that in our segment that is called Chin Music later on. But Chuck, we need to get to a break and our first guest coming up with the Cubs.
All right, very good. And we'll take a break right here, as Bruce mentioned, on 670 The Score inside the clubhouse. At 9:07, we'll return in a moment right here on Inside the Clubhouse.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haugh.
Here comes the 2-2.
Swing and a miss, and the Cubs win the ballgame. Edbert Alzilay saves it for Jameson Taillon. You would have to say, Ron, it's the best pitched game by the Chicago Cubs by anybody all year long. Just a magnificent performance by Taillon in 8 innings. Alzilay gets the save, and the Cubs beat the Yanks in New York, the first win they've ever had in this ballpark.
And that says it all, and welcome back inside the clubhouse. Filling in for David Haugh, this Chuck Swirsky, along with baseball's expert Bruce Levine. And Bruce, again, 3-7-0 for the Cubs, no runs, two hits, no errors for the Yankees, who are really laboring without Aaron Judge with that torn ligament in his right big toe. They just can't hit the ball. They're hitting a major league low 214 since he left the lineup June the 3rd. But this story belonged to Taillon. He was magnificent. Yeah, big contract, as we know, 4 years, $68 million. He's been a disappointment, but he brought it last night.
Yeah, he did, Chuck. He brought it big time. And I believe that, going forward here, Taillon is certainly the type of pitcher that can turn the second half around. I'm hoping that that is the case, as the Cubs starting pitching has been the strength of this team.
Yeah, Bruce, I expect, and this is just me talking, I think the Cubs are going to be a buyer in the marketplace. I'm looking at this division. This division is up for grabs. And I'm looking at the foundation of the front office with the Cubs and the ownership and with the farm system. And I think things are falling into place for the Cubs. And I respect what Cincinnati has done and Nick Kroll, their general manager. I mean, these young kids are playing with a lot of energy. Pittsburgh, had a great start. They've come back down to earth. And Milwaukee is Milwaukee. I get that. The Cardinals, like the White Sox, major disappointments in baseball this year with the Mets. But I really believe, when I look at this Cubs team, I think they can do something the second half. What do you think they're going to do?
Well, there's a couple ways that they can go. The starting pitching is certainly the strength. But, Chuck, when you look at the window of what they have right now, and the fact that they're still building toward their next championship period, they have a tough situation with Marcus Stroman. So they have Stroman signed through next year at $25 million. But Chuck, he can walk away from the contract after this year. He has an opt-out, and pitching as great as he has and being the all-star that he's been and the dominant pitcher that he's been here, it's incumbent upon him to maximize his remaining years left at age 32. He's going to want a 5 or 6 year extension. Are the Cubs able to get something done before the trading deadline with him as an extension, or do they have to look at him as a valuable piece to try to win this year, or to bring in another quality player or two in a trade? These are the things that Jed Hoyer and Carter Hawkins, the Cubs front office, have to look at, and look at it in a very strong way here as they move toward the trading deadline on August 1st.
All right, one other side note before we bring on Jared Young of the Cubs. Cody Bellinger with a career-high now 13-game hitting streak. During that span, he's batting 479 for Cody Bellinger. Hit a home run last night, and again, a career-high 13-game hitting streak. And our guest right here on Inside the Clubhouse featuring Jared Young. And joining us is Jared Young, sponsored by Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Bruce?
Jared, thank you for taking some time out on a busy Saturday morning in New York. First of all, Chuck and I appreciate your time. And more importantly, what has the impact of Yankee Stadium been on you just walking into, even though it's a newer version of Yankee Stadium, the historic New York ballpark and its history?
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. Thanks for having me on, guys. And yeah, you hit the nail on the head when you said historic. Walking in here, you can tell that there's been a lot of big baseball games and a lot of great players come through here with all the signs and the Monument Park out in center. It's pretty cool.
You know, Jared, by the way, happy pre-birthday. You turn 28 tomorrow. So when you were a kid,
I do. Yeah.
When you were a kid growing up in, was it Kelowna? Near the Vancouver area, is that right?
Yeah, I grew up a little north of there in a place called Prince George, and then played some high school baseball in Kelowna. It was great.
So the point being, were you able to get to Seattle to see a Major League Baseball game? When is the first time you actually saw in person a Major League game?
Yeah, I was able to get down to Seattle, I think around 10 or 11. My aunt and uncle lived in Seattle, so I went down for a couple weeks one summer and went to some games, and that's probably when I fell in love with the game, to be completely honest.
And you fell in love with the game after watching Major League Baseball, or the entire atmosphere of going to a ballpark, or what?
Kind of everything. I'd always watched the Jays on TV growing up, but going to a game was something entirely different, and It was pretty special, especially at Safeco Field and watching the Mariners. Back then, they had a really good team, and it was just something really cool that I remember.
The Cubs, Jared Young, our guest on Inside the Clubhouse, Chuck Swirsky, along with Bruce Levine. Chuck's sitting in for David Haugh this week. And Jared, as far as finding your way to the major leagues, that's been an interesting track. You and I talked a little bit about this about 10 days ago, the fact that you were on a very quick pace moving up in the Cubs system when 2020 happened, and all of a sudden we have a 60-game major league season and no minor league year at all. Kind of share with us how 2020 might have impacted you and a lot of other fine young talent in baseball coming up.
Yeah, it was definitely difficult. I know when we got the news that there wasn't going to be a minor league season, everyone kind of panicked a little bit and was like, well, we're not going to be getting any younger and we're not going to get any games under our belt to kind of move ourselves up the ranks. And the year before I played in Double A, and I was really looking to make some headway there in 2020. And when all that got shut down, it was kind of a pause on not only like kind of life that year, but on your baseball career. And when 2021 spring training came around, you could tell there was some extra urgency because of that.
Yeah, I think our line dropped, Bruce, but what is your opinion now that you've seen just a handful of games from Jared?
Well, Chuck, he's been a terrific player as far as you moving from position to position, middle infielder, and a guy that has been around for a little bit, but certainly now coming to the Cubs, playing a little bit of first base, especially in some platoon as far as against right-handed hitters. He's been terrific, and he's had some really big hits to begin with at the beginning of the year. And right now, they're expecting him to continue to play that position for them.
Yeah, and I think he's rejoined us. And Jared, we appreciate your time, obviously, with an early ball game today in New York with the Cubs winning last night against the Yankees. So let's get back to your role with the club, and we picked it up during the COVID. So when did you feel you were back to where you were then post-COVID?
I'd say right around May, after about like a month of games after COVID. I feel like right at the beginning, like I said, there was a lot of urgency with a lot of the guys. And once we kind of got our like feet a little bit settled and the baseball game's rolling again, that's when baseball season really took off.
Jared, when you look at your team there, you have developed a relationship with Nico Hoerner. Can you talk about some of the history of that and how you guys go back and what it's meant to you to have him as a part of this club that you've come up to?
Yeah, it's been amazing. We played in the minor leagues together in Double-A, and then obviously all the spring trainings and working out a little bit in the off season together. We became pretty close, and it's amazing to see all the success he's had up here. And then when I was able to join the team, just a great guy to have in your corner and to bounce some questions off of. If I ever have anything that I'm maybe unsure about, the big leagues can be a lot different than the minors in off the field stuff. He's only a call away, and I know that. I can call him about anything, and it's just he's a great guy to have on your team and a great guy to have in your corner.
Jared Young is our guest right here on Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score. Cubs, Yankees coming up, pregame coverage at 11:30. So, Jared, what are some of the questions you do ask, whether it's Nico Hoerner or any other of your teammates? What are some of the things that you are applying to your own craft that you will go to a player?
Oh, there's plenty. Just different things like pregame routines, how they get ready. You know, if you want to be the best, you got to ask the best. And there's always certain stuff you can pick up. And there's tons of guys in this clubhouse that you can go to and ask different questions. But yeah, just things throughout the game. If you're not playing, different ways to stay locked in, stay ready to come off the bench. After the game, what's the recovery like? How are you getting ready to play 162 games in a season? And these are all questions that you got to ask if you want to find out. So just be open, and the guys will answer the questions.
Jared, in closing with you, and Chuck and I really appreciate your time today, and good luck there at Yankee Stadium. What's been the biggest adjustment hitting-wise for you at the major league level compared to AAA pitching?
I'd say just staying within yourself and knowing that what you're doing well is what got you here, and it's also going to work here. I found at the beginning I had some success just by being who I am, and then the last couple of games, you know, you try and do a lot. You're in the big leagues, and you get in certain situations, and you really want to perform, and sometimes that'll get you a little bit in swing decisions and kind of overswinging. And if you stay within yourself and kind of keep a level head, which isn't easy to do at times, but you got to be able to do it, that's when the success will come.
All right, very good. Hey, Jared, listen, we appreciate your time, and we wish you nothing but the best, and enjoy the Yankee series, and then enjoy the All-Star break. What are you going to do during the break, by the way?
I'm going to head back to Arizona. My girlfriend lives there, and we're gonna hang out and take it easy.
All right, good enough. Be well. Thank you again.
Yeah, anytime. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. That's Jared Young of the Chicago Cubs joining us right here on Inside the Clubhouse. You know, Bruce, hitting a major league pitch is very, very difficult, as we know. I mean, think about this. It is so hard. These pitchers are so good at this level, and they're creating different pitches as we speak. And so for a young player that's in and out of a lineup, I'm sure, as just from the human element, you got to be pressing. You know, early, you know, things kind of fell into place, and then all of a sudden, You know, word gets around about how to pitch to a guy, and before you know it, you know, you go up to the plate, and you kind of are in a funk, and you get in a mini slump, and you start pressing.
Yeah, no doubt about it, Chuck. And again, the difference in pitching is it's so significant from here to there. You know, you have guys that throw 95 to 100 in the minor leagues. You have guys with great breaking balls, but you don't have guys, three or four guys in one game that you're facing as a hitter that all throw 95 to 100, that all have hellacious breaking stuff, that all have a presence on the mound. That is the big difference. You might have a starting pitcher that does that in the minor leagues at AAA. You might have one bullpen guy or two bullpen guys that throw 98 but don't necessarily have command of their breaking stuff. So with that in mind, there's such a huge difference in being able to continue to be successful at the major league level. And Jared Young has worked on that, and he has shown pretty well for the Cubs, Chuck. So as we segue from Jared Young, we are going to start talking a little bit about the draft coming up tomorrow night at 6 o'clock Central Time. The amateur, July amateur draft for Major League Baseball takes place, with the Chicago White Sox drafting at 15, the Cubs at 13, and we will be joining with our MLB pipeline guru for Major League Baseball, Jim Callis, will be joining us in just a minute or so to talk a little bit about that. Chuck, I know the draft is something that isn't quite as sexy in Major League Baseball as it is in the NBA and the NFL, even to a certain extent the NHL. But your thoughts going into the baseball draft and them trying to make it just a little bit more relevant, putting it the day before the All-Star game now rather than in June where it used to be.
Well, I've got a lot of opinions about this. To be quite candid with you, number one, I think it was long overdue what baseball has done with Rob Manfred. I really do. I think they needed to dress this up, and I think they're doing their very best on MLB Network to do so. So, and I'm not a big Rob Manfred fan, to be honest with you, Bruce. I think that there are some things about his leadership qualities that I question, but that's another story for another show with you. But as far as the draft is concerned, I think baseball right now, what they've done, I like some of the elements of this game, and one of the elements is the draft. And because the bottom line is this, Bruce, if you don't have a healthy farm system, it's going to catch up with you sooner or later. And that's why the White Sox really need to have not only a draft in 2023, they need to put together quality drafts for the next 3-4 years to keep this pipeline going, so you can create assets, and then in turn you can do something with those assets if you want to make a push for a player down the stretch or in the off season in the winter meetings to put together a blockbuster trade. So I think this is a critical period of time for both organizations, but especially the White Sox.
Yeah, I agree with you, Chuck. Look, I've long been a proponent of being able to trade draft picks right away. Okay, I think it's an element that Major League Baseball has missed out on, because if there's a strong players in a certain draft as opposed to players that you think are going to take 3, 4, 5 years to develop, and you have a high draft pick and you are also in contention in a certain year, it's pretty incumbent upon you to try to make your team better quicker. And I think in all of sports, Chuck, and especially in baseball right now, teams that were tanking, teams that were not really, you know, doing the things that they had to do to be competitive for a long time, was really bringing the sport down. And I think baseball is approaching doing better with that right now with the new CBA that they have going in, having signed that a year ago with the Players Association, and the players' pay, and the idea that teams need to be more competitive, not sitting on their wallet, moving forward in order for Major League Baseball to be healthy. You can't have teams in one division like Kansas City and Detroit and Cleveland to a certain extent, although they're so superior in the way that they draft and develop, just not spending money, not being competitive year in and year out. It just doesn't work. It drags down the rest of the division. It drags down Major League Baseball. So hopefully with the draft and the future of the draft, there are some mechanisms to make more trades at higher levels at significant times for other teams.
Very much so. Jim Callis has joined us from MLB Pipeline to talk about the draft, sponsored by Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sportsbook, home of the Athletics also. And Jim, welcome to the program. Chuck Swirsky filling in for David Haw. Of course, the legendary Bruce Levine. And Bruce, go ahead.
Well, Jim, first of all, thanks for taking some time out. And I know it is an extraordinarily busy weekend for you as you move toward New York and doing your shows from, well, I'm sure you're moving to Seattle and doing your shows out of there for the All-Star game and the draft. Let's get straight to the White Sox and the Cubs. The Chicago Cubs will be picking at number 13. What do you see draft-wise for the Cubs as far as players available and type of player they might be looking at?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Bruce and Chuck. I was going to say, this year it seems a little bit more difficult to figure out what's going on in the middle of the first round, because after you get past kind of the consensus top five guys, there's a couple pitchers who are probably going to go pretty quick. And then there's, I don't know, 10, 12, 15 college and high school hitters who are all at kind of about the same level. And some of those guys are going to go in the top 10, and some of those guys are going to fall into the 20s. Like, you know, the Cubs last 2 years have taken college pitchers. They took Jordan Wicks. They took Cade Horton. I think they'd be open if a college pitcher got to him, if one of the top guys got to him. You know, Paul Skenes, obviously, who's the best, is going to get nowhere close to him. Rhett Lauder out of Wake Forest and Chase Dolander out of Tennessee might get to them, and I think they could be tempting if they did, but they're probably looking at hitters, and it's a long list. You've got a ton of high school shortstops like Arjun Namala and Colin Houck and Colt Emerson, and also some other high school bats like Aiden Miller and Bryce Eldridge, who's a two-way guy. And then there's a bunch of interesting college bats like Braden Taylor out of TCU and Tommy Troy out of Stanford and Matt Shaw out of Maryland, who's kind of, Troy and Matt Shaw are kind of reminiscent of Nico Horner. And you've got Jacob Gonzalez out of Ole Miss and Jacob Wilson out of Grand Canyon. So, you know, I can come up with scenarios where each one of those guys is gone before they get to them. And I come up with scenarios where some of those guys go in the 20s. So I feel like it's going to be a bat just because that's going to be the strength of the draft where they pick. But I will admit, we're just guessing. I've been giving them Arjun Namala, who's a shortstop from Florida, who's of would be the first player of Indian American descent to play in the big leagues. And he's interesting. He's kind of a power over hit guy. But I've also had teams in the last 24 hours tell me they don't think the Cubs are taking Arjun Namala. So I guess I got to go back to the drawing board for that one.
Well, let's talk then about the Sox. Their farm system obviously needs some players, and I'm being very kind about that. They've got to get it going there. Where is the White Sox system as we speak, and what do they need the most of?
Yeah, no, you're right, Chuck. I mean, the White Sox system's pretty thin. And, you know, I think when you're trying to rebuild a system or build one up, you can't target particular types of players. I mean, you could say, you know, the old saw, you know, college players, because they'll move quicker and, you know, and kind of infuse more, you know, quicker big league guys into your system. So maybe you go that route. You know, and it's interesting. I mean, the two teams pick very close to each other. You know, Cubs are at 13, the White Sox are at 15. I think, you know, look, I mean, we all look at the White Sox, and it's clear they need some pitching. And I think in a perfect world, they'd like a pitcher. I think they'd love to get a chance at Red Lauder out of Wake, who I don't think is going to get to him. Chase Dolan or Tennessee, maybe a slight chance. You know, I've also heard the White Sox might be able or might be willing to dip into the next tier of college pitching, which would be Hurston Waldrop from Florida and Ty Floyd from LSU. Ty Floyd's got a lot of helium right now. He struck out 17 at the College World Series in his last start, tying the record for a nine-inning game. So you hear that. And then it's interesting because you hear mixed things out of the Cubs. Out of the White Sox, you hear, oh, you know, they want, you know, maybe it's a college bat. You know, all those guys I just rattled off for the Cubs. It's a college bat that can move quicker. You know, and Nolan Shanuel, I should have mentioned him with the Cubs too, is a guy who's associated with both teams. He's a first baseman from Florida Atlantic. He had the best, you know, just raw statistics of anybody in college baseball this year. But then you also hear that the White Sox are interested in high school players. So it could be one of those deals where scouting department, you know, and look, they've taken high school bats recently. You know, Colson Montgomery's their best prospect. And maybe the scouting department wants a high school bat, and maybe the higher-ups want a more advanced college guy. So kind of the same boat. Like we hear, you know, it's funny. You hear more names than can possibly go ahead of them. I could probably come up with 15 candidates for both clubs. It's just, it's so murky because you don't know who's going to go after the first five players go off the board.
You're listening to the voice of Jim Callis, MLB Pipeline, right here on 670 The Score, inside the clubhouse, featuring Chicago baseball historian, host, reporter Bruce Levine. This is Chuck Swirsky filling in for David Haw. And if you can break down the respective divisions for a moment and their farm systems as we take a look ahead to the American League Central and the National League Central, as far as what the Reds have done, what the Pirates are attempting to do, what about Milwaukee from the standpoint of the American League with Minnesota, Cleveland, this whole division right now is a mess. Do you see any team in the respective divisions regarding Sox, Cubs, and the Central being the next Orioles team, where they've come out of nowhere and just turning out prospect after prospect? I mean, this Baltimore franchise with the, you know, new leadership has been amazing. So what do the two divisions look like right now?
Yeah, you know, Mike Elias and company have done a great job in Baltimore, and obviously that team's playing very well, and they're probably going to make the playoffs, and they have all kinds of payroll flexibility and a ton of surplus prospects to make trades if they want to go out and do that this year. You know, it's interesting. The AL Central, I don't know that there's, like, anything approaching that, like, as a, you know, player scouting and player development juggernaut that, you know, is going to take a big leap forward. I think probably the best organization in the AL Central at acquiring and developing talent is Cleveland. But it's interesting because if you look at the Guardians, I mean, and you guys see it too, and it came back and it bit him in the playoffs last year, they do a great job with pitchers, and they also do a great job of identifying hitters who have bat-to-ball skills. But they have, like they have almost gone heavy on that approach to a fault. They don't have a lot of power, and then you get to the playoffs and the pitching's better. And, you know, it's hard to string together an inning with five singles and score runs that way. And they had trouble scoring last year's playoffs. So I think Cleveland's got the best, you know, scouting player development system in the AL Central. But I don't think we're going to see them do what Baltimore did. And look, you know, Baltimore got a huge advantage from picking first, second, fifth, and first in four consecutive drafts. Now, granted, you know, they've also had some lower round picks that have done really well too, but now with the draft lottery, you can't even pick that high 4 years in a row. Like if you're in the lottery, even if you're a revenue sharing recipient team, you can't win a lottery pick more than 2 years in a row. So like that wouldn't happen again. And Baltimore is a revenue sharing paying team, if I'm correct. And so they could only be in the lottery literally 1 year in a row going forward. So like we'll never see a team again with four picks like that in a row, you know, unless they change the rules. And then Chuck, in the NL Central, you know, the Reds have a huge influx of young talent. They have some more guys coming. We've seen a lot of them in the big leagues already. And the Pirates, you know, too. The Pirates have had a lot of high picks recently, and they have the number one pick for the second time in 3 years this year. So I think those are the two best. You know, the Cardinals and Brewers are kind of, you know, they're not standout farm systems right now. You know, the Cardinals have done a nice job, but their system's not at its high point. And, you know, I do think the Cubs are in a pretty interesting position. I think they have one of the most improved farm systems over the last couple of years. I mean, it helps when you're trading a lot of veterans for prospects because you can build it up. And I think they've finally kind of figured out pitching development, which they really struggled with for a decade and fell behind some other clubs. But they have a nice balance of hitters and pitchers in their system. So I think the Cubs are in a position the next couple of years where they could be in really good shape.
Jim, in closing with you, and Chuck and I really appreciate your time today. Chuck and I were talking about baseball being behind as far as being able to trade draft picks. And especially now that the number one pick possibly this year is going to get $10 million and maybe be two or three years at least away from possibly playing in the major leagues. What do you think the reality is as far as Major League Baseball, you know, smelling the coffee and letting high draft picks be a part of trades and off seasons just to augment what teams want to do and maybe make some of the lesser teams contenders quicker?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Like when I started this business, I'm getting old, about 34 years ago, you had a lot of people who were adamantly against trading draft picks because you had a situation where Pete Cavilla was a top 10 pick and he forced the Expos to trade him. He wouldn't sign with them and he forced him to trade him to the Rangers before he signed his pro contract. And you had a lot of teams that were worried that agents were going to dictate where guys went and, you know, force trades to the Yankees and that sort of thing. And I think over the years, I think now, and Bruce, you've talked to people, I think the majority of people I talk to are in favor of trading draft picks. You know, maybe you'd have a limit on how many years in the future you could trade a pick. You know, maybe you'd only trade first round picks or top two round picks. But I really thought we would have draft pick trades by now because I want to say it was in the first CBA with the bonus pool, the new bonus pool rules, which I think was 2012. And they created competitive balance picks for smaller revenue franchises. So there's about 14 extra picks, half after the first round, half after the second round, that those teams get as a little extra advantage. And you can trade those picks. And so when that first came in, I think everybody I talked to pretty much felt like, okay, it's a trial balloon. They're going to see how this goes. And you've seen those picks traded. Usually one or two of those picks is traded every year. I don't think any of them have been traded this year. And that was kind of seen as a trial balloon, and there haven't been any problems with it. So I just kind of assumed, okay, we'll expand this at some point. And I think what happens, honestly, is it kind of gets pushed on the back burner. I mean, especially the last CBA negotiation, well, it was very contentious with the lockout, and we almost lost some regular season games. And I think, you know, when the negotiations get that heated, nobody at that point cares about negotiating or discussing, hey, let's trade draft picks, because they're just trying to get a deal done. So I think we'll eventually have more of it, and I think it would create more interest. I mean, imagine if tomorrow night, you know, like when we have the draft, that, you know, okay, let's say the Cubs are a bad example because they're not super in contention now, but let's say the Cubs trade their first-round pick and, you know, added a significant big leaguer. Or the White Sox, you know, okay, right, the White Sox are out of it, and we're trading Lucas Giolito for a first-round pick. That would create a lot of interest if you had moves like that happening during the draft. So I think it will come, Bruce, but I'm surprised we haven't had it already because I thought we were headed there when we had, you know, three CBAs ago. We had a little bit of it. I thought we'd have more.
Jim, Chuck and I certainly appreciate your time. We know it's going to be a busy time. We'll be watching you tomorrow night, 6 o'clock, as you your cohorts get ready to have the draft. It's going to be a fun night for Sox and Cub fans. Thanks again for taking some time out. We'll talk to you soon.
Oh, yeah, anytime, guys. Great talking to you, and glad to come on anytime. Thanks, Bruce. Thanks, Chuck.
All right, Jim, thank you very much. Jim Callis joining us right here on 670 The Score. Dansby Swanson goes on the injured list, a left heel contusion, retroactive to July the 6th, and Miles Mastroboni has been recalled. So that's what's going on with the Cubs. Again, Cubs baseball coming up 11:30 right here on 670 The Score. After Tyone had a masterful game last night, allowed only one hit, eight innings, and a 3-0 Cubs victory at Yankee Stadium in New York. In a moment, Bruce Levine returns to get his thoughts on what's going on with the certain standings throughout Major League Baseball as we approach the All-Star break. This is Chuck Swirsky filling in for David Hall on 670 The Score on Inside the Clubhouse.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Hall.
David, with a much-needed break, this is Chuck Swirsky coming in from the bullpen, Bruce. And Bruce, I'm going to run down very quickly. So Tampa leading Baltimore by 3 games in the American League East, where every team, Bruce, every team playing above 500 ball. Boston, Bruce, is in last place. They are 10 out behind Tampa. Meantime, American League Central, you got Minnesota half game in front of Cleveland. Detroit, 6 games out. I'll tell you, of all the teams in the AL Central, Bruce, I'm intrigued with Detroit. Scott Harris, their new VP of baseball ops and whatnot, I think he's going to get it done there. And I think this Tiger organization has turned the page. I'm going to be very interested to see where this is going.
It's a little clunky right now because they've been stuck in between a team 3 years ago that, you know, in the offseason went in and signed Javier Baez to a big contract. They thought they had a lot of good pitching. They had injuries to some key pitchers, and Baez here and there has been okay, but he hasn't been the dominant player they thought he would be. And you've been suffering with Miguel Cabrera for the last 4 years, one of the great players in the history of the game, playing on one leg and not being able to be there, just having to fulfill a $30 million contract every year. So once they get past this, and this is Miguel Cabrera's last year in the big leagues, they'll have more money, more resources, be able to keep moving forward. So I like your idea with Detroit, but, you know, again, the division itself has been so clunky over the last couple of years here, and now we're seeing you know, Minnesota and Cleveland starting to separate themselves a little bit from the other teams. White Sox are certainly have, no matter how well they play in the second half, Chuck, they have to be sellers here at this trade deadline. There's no question about it.
Absolutely, 100% correct. Texas, a 3-game lead over Houston in the American League West. Atlanta by 9.5 games. 9.5, Bruce Levine, over Miami. And I'll tell you what, the Marlins are having a sensational season. I mean, Skip Schumacher has done a great job in the dugout, and Miami is 12 over 500, but they're 9.5 back of Atlanta. Cincinnati with a 1-game lead over Milwaukee. Cubs 7 out. Pittsburgh 8.5 back. And the Cardinals 12.5 out. And Arizona with half-game lead over the Dodgers. And good news, Bruce, because Corbin Carroll, you know, I saw the ball game the other night with that swing, and he just, that was it, with that shoulder. Yeah. And I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, this is a serious injury. He came back, went 2-for-5 last night in a win over the Pirates. And the good news is he gets to play in his hometown of Seattle, Bruce, for the All-Star game. So it's a good story for Corbin Carroll.
Yeah, and before we go to the break here, it's just great that teams like Baltimore, Arizona, Miami are stepping up. They're going to be competitive playoff teams in 2023. Baseball needs that shot in the arm. Certainly, we're always concerned here with the Cubs and the White Sox, but the overall health of Major League Baseball and some of the have-nots starting to be competitive teams, and that gets me excited about Major League Baseball this year, Chuck.
Absolutely, because you know, you get concerned whether or not these franchises are even relevant in their marketplace if they're out of it by June, July, and then people start, you know, throwing their attention to NFL training camps and what's going on. So it is good news, and you're right about Baltimore and Arizona and Miami, although I have serious reservations about baseball in Florida, as we talked about the other night. The attendance in Tampa and Miami, not good at all. And that's a major issue that baseball is going to have to confront sooner than later. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll return in a moment on 670 The Score, Inside the Clubhouse. We'll be right back on Inside the Clubhouse featuring Bruce Levine.
Seasons, just to kind of augment what teams want to do and maybe make some of the lesser teams contenders quicker.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Like, when I started this business, I'm getting old, about 34 years ago, you had a lot of people who were adamantly against trading draft picks because you had a situation where Pete Cavilla was a top 10 pick, and he forced the Expos to trade him. He wouldn't sign with him, and he forced him to trade him to the Rangers before he signed his pro contract. And you had a lot of teams that were worried that agents were going to dictate where guys went and, you know, forced trades to the Yankees and that sort of thing. And I think over the years, I think, you know, and Bruce, you've talked to people. I think the majority of people I talk to are in favor of trading draft picks. You know, maybe you'd have a limit on how many, you know, how many years in the future you could trade a pick. You know, maybe you'd only trade first round picks or top two round picks. But I really thought we would have draft pick trades by now, because I want to say it was in the first CBA with the bonus pool, the new bonus pool rules, which I think was 2012. And they created competitive balance picks for smaller revenue franchises. So there's about 14 extra picks, half after the first round, half after the second round, that those teams get as a little extra advantage. And with the, you can trade those picks. And so when that first came in, I think everybody I talked to pretty much felt like, okay, it's a trial balloon. They're going to see how this goes. And you've seen those picks traded. Usually one or two of those picks is traded every year. I don't think any of them have been traded this year. And that was kind of seen as a trial balloon, and there haven't been any problems with it. So I just kind of assumed, okay, we'll expand this at some point. And I think what happens, honestly, is it kind of gets pushed on the back burner. I mean, especially the last CBA negotiation, well, it was very contentious with the lockout, and we almost lost some regular season games. And I think, you know, when the negotiations get that heated, nobody at that point cares about negotiating or discussing, hey, let's trade draft picks, because they're just trying to get a deal done. So I think we'll eventually have more of it, and I think it would create more interest. I mean, imagine if tomorrow night, you know, like when we have the draft, that, you know, okay, let's say the Cubs are a bad example because they're not super in contention now, but let's say the Cubs trade their first-round pick and, you know, added a significant big leaguer. Or the White Sox, you know, okay, right, the White Sox are out of it, and we're trading Lucas Giolito for a first-round pick. That would create a lot of interest if you had moves like that happening during the draft. So I think it will come, Bruce, but I'm surprised we haven't had it already, because I thought we were headed there when we had, you know, three CBAs ago. We had a little bit of it. I thought we'd have more.
Jim, Chuck and I certainly appreciate your time. We know it's going to be a busy time. We'll be watching you tomorrow night, 6 o'clock, as you your cohorts get ready to have the draft. It's going to be a fun night for Sox and Cub fans. Thanks again for taking some time out. We'll talk to you soon.
Oh, yeah, anytime, guys. Great talking to you, and glad to come on anytime. Thanks, Bruce. Thanks, Chuck.
All right, Jim, thank you very much. Jim Callis joining us right here on 670 The Score. Dansby Swanson goes on the injured list, a left heel contusion, retroactive to July the 6th. And Miles Mastroboni has been recalled. So that's what's going on with the Cubs. Again, Cubs baseball coming up 11:30 right here on 670 The Score. After Tyone had a masterful game last night, allowed only one hit, eight innings, and a 3-0 Cubs victory at Yankee Stadium in New York. In a moment, Bruce Levine returns to get his thoughts on what's going on with the certain standings throughout Major League Baseball as we approach the All-Star break. This Chuck Swirsky filling in for David Hall on 670 The Score on Inside the Clubhouse.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haw.
David, with a much-needed break, this Chuck Swirsky coming in from the bullpen, Bruce. And, Bruce, I'm going to run down very quickly. So Tampa leading Baltimore by 3 games in the American League East, where every team, Bruce, every team playing above 500 ball. Boston, Bruce, is in last place. They are 10 out behind Tampa. Meantime, American League Central, you got Minnesota half game in front of Cleveland. Detroit, 6 games out. I'll tell you, of all the teams in the AL Central, Bruce, I'm intrigued with Detroit. Scott Harris, their new VP of baseball ops and whatnot, I think he's going to get it done there. And I think this Tiger organization has turned the page. I'm going to be very interested to see where this is going.
It's a little clunky right now because they've been stuck in between a team 3 years ago that, you know, in the offseason went in and signed Javier Baez to a big contract. They thought they had a lot of good pitching. They had injuries to some key pitchers. And Baez here and there has been okay, but he hasn't been the dominant player they thought he would be. And you've been suffering with Miguel Cabrera for the last 4 years, one of the great players in the history of the game, playing on one leg and not being able to be there, just having to fulfill a $30 million contract every year. So once they get past this, and this is Miguel Cabrera's last year in the big leagues, They'll have more money, more resources, be able to keep moving forward. So I like your idea with Detroit, but you know, again, the division itself has been so clunky over the last couple of years here, and now we're seeing you know, Minnesota and Cleveland starting to separate themselves a little bit from the other teams. White Sox are certainly have, no matter how well they play in the second half, Chuck, they have to be sellers here at this trade deadline. There's no question about it.
Absolutely, 100% correct. Texas, a 3-game lead over Houston in the American League West. Atlanta by 9.5 games. 9.5, Bruce Levine, over Miami. And I'll tell you what, the Marlins are having a sensational season. I mean, Skip Schumacher has done a great job in the dugout. And Miami is 12 over 500, but they're 9.5 back of Atlanta. Cincinnati with a 1-game lead over Milwaukee. Cubs 7 out. Pittsburgh 8.5 back. And the Cardinals 12.5 out. And Arizona with half-game lead over the Dodgers. And good news, Bruce, because Corbin Carroll, you know, I saw the ball game the other night with that swing, and he just, that was it, with that shoulder. Yeah. And I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, this is a serious injury. He came back, went 2-for-5 last night, and it went over the Pirates. And the good news is he gets to play in his hometown of Seattle, Bruce, for the All-Star game. So it's a good story for Corbin Carroll.
Yeah, and before we go to the break here, it's just great that teams like Baltimore, Arizona, Miami are stepping up. They're going to be competitive playoff teams in 2023. Baseball needs that shot in the arm. Certainly, we're always concerned here with the Cubs and the White Sox, but the overall health of Major League Baseball and some of the have-nots starting to be competitive teams in, that gets me excited about Major League Baseball this year, Chuck.
Absolutely, because you know, you get concerned whether or not these franchises are even relevant in their marketplace if they're out of it by June, July, and then people start, you know, throwing their attention to NFL training camps and what's going on. So it is good news, and you're right about Baltimore and Arizona and Miami, although I have serious reservations about baseball in Florida, as we talked about the other night. The attendance in Tampa and Miami, not good at all. And that's a major issue that baseball is going to have to confront sooner than later. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll return in a moment on 670 The Score, Inside the Clubhouse. We'll be right back on Inside the Clubhouse featuring Bruce Levine.